Coca, la quiere filtrar, el pase por el medio, bueno para Palermo, ojo que picó bien Neitz, abaurría la pelota para Neitz. ¡Lo hizo Neitz! ¡Abaurría! ¡Sobre la hora! ¡Qué golazo, señores! ¡De la Boca! ¡Una cera!
Welcome in to episode 5 of The Heart of the Game. I'm your host, Nate Abaurea. You can get at me on Twitter, at Nate Abaurea, and be sure to follow at World Soccer Talk. Our guest in this edition of the show, a very dear friend of mine, Nico Cantor. And we talked a lot about a love affair of Nico's with a certain Boquita, that club from Buenos Aires known as Boca Juniors. A club that was handed down to Nico by his father, the great Andrés Cantor. And we talked about the blessings and even the difficulties of the Cantor commentary legacy. And we broke down some linguistic nuance of the Argentino accent and a whole lot more. But of course, we started with Boca. I want to go to the Nico Cantor ties to La Bombonera. I want to get to the roots of these passions and this love affair for Boquita. Where does the love for Boca Juniors truly come from, Nico Cantor?
So it's basically my dad. My dad is the one that drenched me in this passion for Boca ever since I was little. He would wrap me when I was like an infant, literally like weeks, maybe days. I don't know. In a Boca shirt. There's a picture. I put it up on my Instagram actually, like a couple months ago, of me and as an infant, as days of life, wrapped in a Boca shirt. And I think it's only natural that I became such a big Boca fan. But I think all of it became magnified with those Libertadores wins at the turn of the century, against Cruz Azul, that win against Palmeiras. Those wins are so big because I was 6 or 7 years old. In 2000 against Palmeiras, I was 6, or not even maybe. I was born in 93. Yeah, I hadn't turned 7 years old yet. I was 6 years old. And those moments where Boca, I think, became one of the best teams in the world, where we beat Real Madrid, where we beat AC Milan, I think that just magnified my passion and convinced me that I was aboard the right train. And there was no looking back. And it has identified my passion. It has driven me to pursue the career that I'm in. And luckily enough, or maybe unluckily enough, I don't know, you can see both sides of the coin here. I haven't called the Boca game ever in my short professional career as a broadcaster. And I don't know how that would be. I hope it will go well. But it's completely different. I've had to work Argentina games in big tournaments, and I can really put on my journalist outfit and be objective about Argentina, but there's something about Boca that provokes this unequal passion to anything else. It's this unbridled intensity that you literally can't describe it. People say it's like that passion you have for a son, but I don't have children. I'm not married, so I can't compare that to anything. But it's literally there's a fire in me that is the root of all my passion for soccer, and it all begins. The origin is the blue and gold.
boca, mi buen amigo. You talk about your father, Nico, and so many people who listen to this show will be familiar with the work of the great Andres Cantor, and I'm sure you'll be the first to say one of his greatest accomplishments is handing Boca Juniors down to his son. That's one of the things that you are surely most grateful for when it comes to the life and times of Andres Cantor. But I have to ask you about growing up with him as a broadcaster and growing up knowing who your father was and understanding what he represented to a lot of people and what he meant to a lot of people, including yours truly. I've told you this story many a times in the mid to late 90s. Your father's voice was part of what helped me learn and love football and develop a little bit of Spanish language skill as a little white kid in Watsonville, California, and how necessary that was in my life and how much that's paid off. It was the goal calls, the writings, and the commentaries of Andres Cantor that were as influential as anything when it came to my romanticism for football, my love of the Spanish language, my love of so many different nuances and niche things within the beautiful game. And so I want to ask you, as the man's son, when did it hit you of who he was and what he meant to, whether it was kids like me or 80-year-olds in other countries or middle-aged folks in America or Mexico or around Latin America? When did it hit you as a young kid of who your dad really was?
So those stories, Nate, that you say from your own perspective, that's incredible to hear. And I don't think growing up, I really knew my dad's stature in the sports broadcasting realm, because I wasn't in it. Because you always take those things for granted when you're little, and maybe taking it for granted is the wrong expression, but it's like blissful ignorance. You don't know. I remember when I was really little, and my dad would work for. He would leave in the morning and he would come back so late. I mean, I realize now how much of an effort my dad put into his career to be where he is now, as I'm starting off my career, as I'm working late nights and I leave and I, you know, my girlfriend has to understand that I need to work an entire weekend and not see her while she's off and she might not see me. And I'm starting, or at least my parents are starting to see parallels in my life as they had in theirs with my relationship with my girlfriend now and stuff like that. As my dad, when he literally worked his ass off for his, I can say that, right? I hope I can say it. I said it
absolutely.
Anyway.
Absolutely.
Because he did. And when you're a kid, you have no clue. You have no clue what money's worth. You have no clue what working is like. And my dad was just the guy that would say goal to me. And he was on TV. and I knew my dad was famous, but maybe I didn't know how famous he was. And you take him for granted. It's like a natural part of life. And my friends knew who my dad was, and my family friends and my cousins. It was like my dad was the goal guy. And maybe it wasn't until the summers that I really wanted to pursue this type of career that I would tag along with him to Copa Oros. I would go and help him out. Literally every summer, my responsibilities would get more important until I became a broadcaster. I was literally the Fútbol de Primera, which is my dad's radio company. I was the intern. So I would help out with getting people coffee, with writing down stats, just getting a feel to what broadcasting a tournament is. And then when we would be like outside of the stadium for Mexico games and the waves of people that wanted to take pictures with my dad, I think that's when I started realizing how big he really was. And when social media started becoming a thing and the interactions that my dad would have on social media, be them good interactions and be them bad interactions, I think that's when you really started to get a sense of how big he is. And now that I'm working and people that come up to me and talk to me and and just say so many extraordinary things about my dad and about his career and about how much of a good person he is. I'm starting to get a nice rounded view of how much effort my dad has put into it. But not only that, how great of a person my dad has been throughout all of this. Kind, very collaborative, as well as just a very open person and generous, like he is as a father. But now I'm seeing it from a professional point of view, where he has been able to maintain that professionalism while staying true to himself. And I think that's the greatest thing that my dad has been able to do throughout, I don't know how many decades of broadcasting. And it's quite so incredible. And I couldn't ask for a greater mentor than my dad, because it's he who I learned the most from. And he literally reads every single one of my tweets. And we get to the dinner table and he has a list of every tweet that I wrote wrong, or how I could say it better, or everything. It's like, it's incredible. Like, just how much effort he put into his career, now he's putting into mine to help me out.
Just for the sake of duality, I have to ask you something. As a journalist, as a broadcaster, do you ever find yourself under a little bit of added pressure due to the fact that your last name is Cantor, due to the fact that most people associate with you, rightly so, he's your father, for God's sake, with the man who is your father, with Andres. And when they hear or read the name Nico Cantor, they know that you're Andres Cantor's son. Does that ever maybe put you under a little bit of added pressure? How do you manage with that aspect as a journalist, as a professional, of the name that you carry and the weight that it holds?
I think I came to terms with that, Nate, a long time ago, when I was like in high school. I know that I'm going to be Andres Cantor's son forever. I just got to blaze my own path. Because I think my dad was put into a situation, or at least he came into a situation that didn't have any parallel anywhere. It was such a unique situation where he came into the American landscape of soccer broadcasting and no one was there. And he really pioneered, along with other names, this effort. And I can think of Norberto Longo, and that's another huge name that I have to add. Norberto, who is my dad's late commentator, passed away around 2003, I believe. And he and my dad were the 1-2 team. And to this day, people write to my dad about Norberto, and it's incredible. And that's also, to go back to answer and to maybe deepen the answer to one of the questions you asked, I think that's when you realize how much my dad has touched people around the country. When people talk to him about Norberto, his daughter got married in January, like a couple months ago. And the amount of response he got on social media, because he walked her down the aisle. She doesn't have a dad. I mean, and the greatest father figure, her boyfriend, like, asked for my dad's blessing to marry Norberto's daughter. And that literally just came so full circle. And that is how you really get a sense of the impact. So I think I've come to terms that Nico Cantor is going to be Andres Cantor's son. And when people might see me on the TV 20 years ago, people are going to say, hey, you know who that is? Like, it's okay. It's like, I literally went to the tailor the other day to pick up some clothes, and the owner of the shop, she was like telling her daughter, oh, you know who's his dad? Like, it's normal. I don't take it as an offense. In fact, I take it as something that's part of me. And I'm going to blaze my own path, and I want to blaze my own path. And I'm trying to do it in two different languages, something that's different to my dad, broadcasting in English, broadcasting in Spanish, and just do different things. I mean, my bread and butter, of course, is play-by-play. I love it. I want to do play-by-play until I die, but I'm okay if I'm going to be Andres Cantor's son. It's totally cool with me, because being Andres Cantor's son is the best thing to ever happen.
Well, you're certainly carrying on the Cantor legacy while also blazing your own trail, Nico, and making your own name. And I'm glad that you brought up the bilingual approach to what you're doing. And that's how you and I, those few years back now, it feels like ages. It was like, what, 3-4 years ago that we started connecting on social media, you and I. And it was all based around bilingualism. It was based around going, hey, I like what you're doing. English, Spanish, let's bring it all together. Cross-border mentality for yours truly here in San Diego and Tijuana, and obviously for all the bilingualism that is represented in Miami and around the areas where you grew up. And I want to actually, bouncing off of that language discussion, I actually want to go back to something relating to my upbringing, listening to your father, because a lot of times listening to Andres Cantor, it was in relation to Mexico matches or USA matches on Telemundo in the mid to late 90s. Then obviously into the 98 World Cup, and wasn't quite old enough for 94, but 98 was the one where it was, for me, as much the Andres Cantor World Cup as it was the Zinedine Zidane France World Cup. I mean, that's the type of influence that we're talking about. And I'll never forget learning a little bit more that year, reading the famous goal book that your father wrote, and learning a little bit about his background in Argentina, and then hearing him speak the Spanish language, and me going, wait, his voice sounds a little bit different than all the Mexicanos that I grew up with here in Watsonville. What is this accent? And then really becoming enamored and just borderline obsessed with the Argentine accent for pretty much the rest of my life to this very moment and forevermore. So, Nico Cantor, I throw it back to you, whether it's you, and we've talked a little bit about this off the air, whether it's you, whether it's your father, whether it is the great, and I mean great, Mariano Kloss, one of the other important voices in my soccer upbringing. What is it about the Argentine accent that just marries so perfectly with the beautiful game, with the game of soccer? Why is it that the Argentino accent works so perfectly for football? And how would you summarize, how would you explain the Argentine accent to someone, Nico?
Wow, what a fantastic question. And to just add a small detail to your whole explanation, my dad, because he's Argentine, I think had to really soften his accent as he was broadcasting to a wide range of Hispanic nationalities in the United States, because you just don't have Mexicans and Argentines in the United States. You've got Mexicans, you've got Colombians, you've got El Salvadorians, you've got Hondurans, you've got Panamanians, Venezuelans, Chileans, everything. You have literally every single country in Latin America is in the United States listening to a World Cup broadcast. And if you're too Argentine, it might be off-putting, because my dad's not broadcasting for Argentina. So as Argentine as he might sound, his broadcasting, I don't want to say broadcasting voice because he doesn't put on a voice, but it's very softened. Whereas I haven't been able to soften my Argentine accent. I speak more Argentinian than my dad. And especially when it comes to radio. With radio, I let loose. And it's almost as if I'm broadcasting for an Argentine accent in Spanish, for an Argentine audience in Spanish. And it's, I don't know what it is about the Argentine. And maybe it can come from a biased perspective, because I come from an Argentine family. I was born here in the United States, but my upbringing was very culturally Argentinian. I think it's because it goes so back. It's the root of Argentine broadcasting and soccer goes hand in hand, and at its essence, in that Rio Platense zone between Uruguay and Argentina, it's become this, it's so synonymous with the great goals and the great calls of all time. I mean, you can look back to the 86 World Cup and hear those calls of Maradona and you hear Victor Hugo, who's actually Uruguayan, calling the greatest goal of all, I mean, the two greatest goals of all time, but the Barrilete Cósmico, de qué planeta viniste para dejar en el camino a tanto inglés y que todo el país sea juntado,
puño apretado, gritando por Argentina.
Gracias Dios por estas lágrimas, por esta Argentina 2, Inglaterra 0. And he's Uruguayan, you know? So it just, I think it just becomes, it's the essence. It's because I don't think there is another culture where soccer is such an important aspect of society, of literally of society, of relationships, of literally your work. You work to go watch soccer. I mean, I haven't seen it as devoted in any other Latin American culture. And people might think, oh, what an Argentine, you know, pounding his own chest because, but to me, it's the truth. I mean, and that's not to say that the other countries are not as dedicated and passionate, because they are. I mean, Colombians are crazy passionate about their soccer, and Chileans as well. But there, I think the Argentine culture has been so devoted for such a long time, and that has its pros and its cons, man. I mean, people die from going to soccer games, and there's violence and there's stuff like that, and that goes hand in hand with the extreme over the line devotion. But it, and this is a whole social, political, economic commentary that we don't have time here, Nate. And I literally wrote my thesis about this, and it's unparalleled, and that's why I think the Argentine commentary, the accent, and I don't even know how to describe it. It's so it's like an Italian and Spanish in its most simple form. I think that's the most simple explanation you can give, because Argentines, I think they're the Italians of South America. They're the Europeans of South America. They have that stereotype for its good and bad sides. But that's what it is. Argentines are so passionate about soccer that that's why I think there have been such historic broadcasters that have been able to put their voice, and their voice has been synonymous with so many triumphs for so many teams and so many players that it's just become it's become unique. It's become an emblem of Spanish language sports broadcasting.
There were so many things that you said there that I absolutely love, and one of the main ones at the top of the list is the shout out to the great Victor Hugo Morales and that call of the Barrilete Cósmico in the 86 World Cup. And I love that you spotlight the fact that Victor Hugo, the voice of the greatest moments in Argentine football history, the voice of Radio Argentina for so many World Cups, he was the man, he was the voice for so many people, and he was actually Uruguayan, and he became the voice of Argentina. And that border, that cross is such an interesting one when it comes to two countries who wear similar colors on the field. They both despise Brazil. They both share rivalries with Brazil and the region there. Of course, they also hate each other when it's time to go head to head. However, the Argentina-Uruguay relationship is such an interesting one. And I have to tell you a very, very funny story from the 2018 World Cup. I was up in L.A. With my girlfriend's family, and we were driving around to some family gatherings on a Sunday, and it was the match? It was Croatia and Denmark, that brilliant, brilliant Croatia-Denmark round of 16 game that you were on radio for, on Football de Primera. So we're running around. I'm trying to get it on at the restaurant that we go to with her family up in LA. We're meeting up with the other East LA family over at another spot. So we end up taking in this game at like seven different spots, and it went to extra time, went to penalties. I got it on the radio for one part. I'm in a different car now. I got it on a TV here, TV there, and we're keeping track of this brilliant Croatia-Denmark match. And I'll never forget, in the back seat was a family friend of Sofia's, and she is an older Dominican woman, Dominicana, who actually studied linguistics way back when. And bouncing off of the Derek Ray interview right here on the Heart of the Game, when we spent quite a lot of time breaking down linguistics and what they mean and how they relate to cultural romanticism and our love of football. And I'll never forget Minerva sitting in the back seat, and I'm cranking Football de Primera. I got the Nico Contour play-by-play going. I'm like, you know, I'm showing off a little bit. Yeah, I know this guy. Yeah, good friend of mine here. Yeah. And the game's playing on. And finally, Minerva chimes in, and she goes, "Eres Uruguayo?" And I said, "What?" She goes, is he Uruguayan?" And I went, "No, he's Argentine." She goes, "Oh, I was close." And so she heard your call and went, "Oh, Uruguayo." And the notion that the commonality between Victor Hugo Morales, it comes back there. And I've talked about this with so many people, of the almost indecipherable differences between Argentina and Uruguay. And is there really that much of a difference when you consider the vocal inflections? I'm curious to hear your thoughts, because I know this is some duality here, the rivalry between Argentina and Uruguay, but do commonality and friendship perhaps outweigh the animosity in relation to this one?
So that's such a great description. It's a great lead into what I'm about to say. To get things started, I love the Uruguayan culture. I think they do asados so right. that's barbecues for everyone who's listening. I mean, Argentines do it their own way, but Uruguayans, with almost the same type of meat, the same cuts of meat, they do it in a different way, and they do it so right. And my dream is to have a Uruguayan barbecue where I can cook with literally the cow just put the knifed into the ground. Anyway, they do mate better, which is our yerba mate. So it's the Argentine, Paraguayan, Uruguayan, Southern Brazilian tea that it was indigenous at some point, and now it just becomes so commonplace that it's like this national tea. And they do it the right way, I think. They do it the better way, let's say that. Not right way, because some Argentines might say that I'm it's treasonous that I'm saying this. But the Uruguayan accent, I cannot decipher it from an Argentine accent. I'm pretty good, I could say, at imitating a bunch of Latin American accents, and I feel very confident in a lot of them. And listening to people, even from cities where they're from, within their countries, but if you put an Argentine if you put a Buenos Aires Argentine next to a Uruguayan, I couldn't tell you the difference. I don't know why. I don't know why. I have a lot of Uruguayan friends, and maybe I'm realizing it. It might be a little bit slower. Let me give you like a good. If you wanna realize how different it is, you know, now that weed is legal in Uruguay, it's like, imagine if an Argentine smoked a joint of weed and he spoke slowly through that. You know, I mean, that's my only analogy. That sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. But that's those are the little things that I put into my head to kind of like decipher what is what. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But it's the trickiest one to decipher.
Oh, sorry, Nico. I was slowing down there for a second. Let me get back to the interview here real quick. One last little bit of the linguistic discussion that I want to break down with you. And this is, again, shout out to Derek Ray for inspiring this, talking about Scottish people learning German and talking about his infatuation with German language and even just German sound making back in that episode of The Heart of the Game. Check out the Derek Ray episode of the show when you're done listening to this very Nico Cantor edition. The double L. In Argentina, and with the Argentine accent, or perhaps also with the Uruguayan accent. I will never forget, you know how much proper pronunciation means to me as someone who has had my own last name butchered for the majority of my life, and how much how much the name Abaurea means to me, and thus how much everyone's name means to me, and to offer proper pronunciation. And there was a player who was actually playing, funny enough, for Pachuca under one Martin Palermo this last year. And I am calling the Xolos Pachuca. It was a Copa MX match, and I'll never forget me and my wonderful, wonderful co-commentator, Tony Alvarez, getting in a 4 or 5 minute spat on the commentary gantry about a half hour from kickoff as we were going over every last little note for the game. And I talked about this guy who was a Premier League champion, the only Premier League champion, the guy to come back and actually play in Liga MX as a Premier League champion. Chicharito did it the other way around. And there's a few other people who have done it kind of other ways around. But Leonardo Ulloa was the first person to actually be a Premier League winner. He won the Premier League with Leicester City, and to then be a Liga MX player just 3 years later. And so there we were, Leonardo Ulloa. Leo Ulloa is starting up top. And I kept saying it just like that. I would say Leonardo Ulloa. And Tony looks at me, he goes, Ulloa. It's a double L in Spanish. It's Ulloa. And I said, no, I'm fairly certain it's Ulloa. And we went back and forth for 4 or 5 minutes. It was freaking comical of the Mexicano saying Ulloa and me just absolutely positive that I was doing the right thing by adding that little zh to the double L there and referring to him as Leonardo Ulloa. Nico, tell me I was right and tell me why I was right, please.
So you were right. And let me add another anecdote. That my dad told me about Arlo White. When Leo Ulloa was playing in the Premier League, he came over to my dad and asked my dad, how do you pronounce it? How do you pronounce it as an Argentine? My dad said, Leo Ulloa. And if you go back and listen to an Arlo White broadcast of Leicester City, he says Leo Ulloa in his a British way of trying to pronounce an Argentine name, and that is totally the right thing to do. And I try to do that as much as I can with my broadcasts. And it is Ulloa, that double L. If it's an Argentine and you ask him what's his name, he's gonna say Ulloa. Just it happened to me when I broadcasted Atlanta United for so long. Hector El Tito Villalba, he plays with Paraguay national team, but he's an Argentine. He's Argentine born, and he pronounces his name Villalba. And I broadcasted it every single goal that he scored, Tito Villalba. And I would say it like that. And I try to do the same thing with Brazilian names, even though people might not know, might think it's wrong what I'm saying. Like if it's Thiago Silva, the center back for PSG, the Brazilian center back, I'll say Thiago Silva, although it's so common in Latin American countries, because it's like you translated it to Spanish and it's Thiago Silva, but his name is Thiago Silva. It happens to me a lot with the DC United center midfielder on a broadcast in English, and it sounds so weird when I'm talking about DC United has the ball at midfield, the ball goes back to Felipe. It's Felipe Martins. Is the official Brazilian pronunciation of this midfielder. And it sounds odd, but in reality, I like being true to each culture, and you're not going to get it right 100% of the time, and it's totally okay, and I understand when people don't get it right, because Ulloa is not technically wrong, but correct. The correct pronunciation is Leo Ulloa.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it. One of my favorite other anecdotes with the Argentino accent and the double L was Gustavo Bo, the former Racing forward, now playing with the New England Revolution and had those great few seasons as a member of Xolos of Club Tijuana, fan favorite at Estadio Caliente. And I was meeting Gustavo Bo's young daughter, Martu, the famous Martucha, down on the post-game pitch, and I'm down there with La Pantera, and Martu is showing off to me, knowing that I was the English language broadcast voice at that time for Club Tijuana. She was anxious to show off her skills of bilingualism to me, so she's 4 years old down there translating the entire color wheel and counting to 20 in both languages and just doing all these extraordinary little translation exercises. And I'll never forget, we're going through the colors and Gustavo would say a color and she'd shout it out in English. She'd say, verde, and she'd go, green, and she'd say, azul, and then she'd go, blue. And then Gustavo went, amarillo. And I went, what color is amarillo? And then she looked back at me and went, yellow. And I went, oh, there's that accent popping up yet again. Yeah. I love this thing. There we go. Amarillo, amarillo. So it really does come down to accent, culture, and nuance of language. And you're so proud of your cultural heritage and putting a bow on this whole thing. You talked about your mother as a proud Honduran, your father as an Argentine who's basically by this point become an adopted Mexican, an adopted hunter, and an adopted American. I mean, he is Latin America in a body, your father. What are you, Nico, when it comes to cultural identity? I mean, you're Argentino, you're an American boy, you're an American college graduate. You are as American as anyone could ever come, and you also carry this proud cultural heritage with you to Argentina. How would you sum up who you are at this point in your life?
So I had so much trouble with my cultural identity in college, you know, a typical college crisis. And I came to the conclusion that I'm American. I wanted to be Argentine. And when I went to study abroad in Argentina and I told people I was American, they were like, no, you're not. You sound just like an Argentine. And when I was in college and I would speak English and I would have this Latino accent or this weird accent when I would speak English, everybody would ask me, where are you from? I'm like, guys, I'm from here. I'm from the United States. It's like, no. So it's like I didn't belong anywhere. Like, I wasn't truly Argentine. I wasn't truly American. And at the end of the day, I realized that I'm a proud American. This is the greatest country in the world. I'm so blessed to have grown up here. That I have the liberties that I have, that I can do the things that I want to do without anybody getting in my way, that I have the full right to pursue whatever I want to pursue. If I want to stop being a broadcaster and be a banker tomorrow, I can do that, and there's nobody will get in my way, and it's full, you know, I have that, the racetrack is open for me to go. There's a green light. And that's what's so great about being an American. And I only know the words to the American national anthem. I put my hands proudly on my heart whenever there's an American national anthem at any MLS game that I go to. And I'm proud because I was schooled here. My friends are from here. But at the same time, I do not forget my heritage, my culture. I love cooking asados. I love cooking barbecues. I love cooking barbecues and drinking mate and listening to cumbia while I do it. And you know what? And afterwards, I'll have a spoonful of dulce de leche because I worked out in the morning and I want to have an Argentine dessert to finish it all off because I deserve it. And that's what's so great as well about being in this country, that you can have this huge mix of identities, this huge mix of culture, and to make a nod to my Honduran side. I love my baleadas. I love frijoles. I love plátanos. I love Honduran food as well. I love the spicy and everything. You know, I'm an Argentine. I manifest myself as an Argentine, but then someone sees me put Tabasco on my steak and they're like, whoa, what did you just do? So that's, you know, it's that's what's so great about being an American. You can pick and choose and pull from all these different cultures, but at the same time, exercise your right to be an American with this huge mix of nationalities and of personalities and of culture that I don't think you get in any other place in the world.
And no one can be you better than you. And to put a proper bow on this episode, really appreciate your time, Nico, and us getting this done here on the Heart of the Game. Look, I'll cut right to the chase, and I hope this really ties everything together. You knew I wasn't going to let you get out of here without a little bit of classic Nico Cantor play-by-play. Perhaps a little
un homenaje a Mariano Clos, Victor Hugo Morales, Andres Cantor, and all the other voices that we love so much. And I told you before we clicked record here this morning from 3,000 miles away, Nico, I told you that I put on, in the spirit of this episode, in the spirit of doing an interview with Nico Cantor, I put on, shout out to my boy in Tijuana, Heriberto, who just went on the trip of a lifetime down to Buenos Aires and brought me back from the streets of Buenos Aires, a 1981 Diego Maradona Boca replica kit. And I put that kit on for this interview, Nico, to put this into the proper vibe, to give us the proper Boquita spirit for this episode. So I have to ask you for a favor to close this thing out. Can you do, I want to play for Boca, I want to be at the Bombonera, and I would like any of the names that we mentioned before, Riquelme, Palermo, Maradona, Tevez, any of those guys, I would like them to be on the field with me, and I would like to score a goal for Boca Juniors. Can we do that?
Señoras y señores, minuto 90, Boca contra River, 0-0, el partido está para cualquiera. Desde el arco, Nico, el arquero de Boca, saca lejos, la gana en la mitad de la cancha, Batalla. ¡Qué bien la peinó! La pelota por afuera, Román, que la pisa, aguanta, tres cuartos de cancha por el costado derecho. Boca, la quiere filtrar, el pase por el medio, bueno para Palermo, ojo, que picó bien Neit, aburría la pelota para Neit. ¡Qué! ¡Lo hizo Knight! ¡Aurrea! ¡Sobre la hora! ¡Qué golazo, señores! ¡Gana Boca! ¡Una cena!
Nico Cantor, you're an absolute ledge.
Thank you, Nate.
Another huge thanks to my good friend Nico Cantor, and another big thank you to Boca, mi buen amigo. Cada vez te quiero más. Boca, mi buen amigo. Thanks to Nico Cantor. Thanks to Andres Cantor. Thanks to Mariano Clos. Thanks to Victor Hugo Morales. Thanks to Diego Armando Maradona. Thanks to Juan Román Riquelme. Thanks to Martín Palermo. Carlitos Tevez. Boquita, Boquita, Boquita. And love to fans of other Argentine teams too. Except for those roosters across the way. For the heart of the game and the good folks at World Soccer Talk, I'm Nate Abarrea. Hasta la próxima. Bye for now.